Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
And welcome to the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks, and I'm joined by the Nike England flag to the actual England flag. It's Justin Peach.
Good day to you, Ryan.
Yeah, we'll just avoid all that. I cannot think of anything worse than diving into that debate right now. Justin, how's it going? Are you coping with the international break?
Yeah, I've been delving into other sports. I was explaining off air that I went bouldering.
All right.
Yeah, I went bouldering like a proper hipster would. I'm just living up to the name. It was good fun. It's like puzzle solving, but actually, if you don't solve the puzzle, you could fall and die.
Yep.
So there's an element of danger to it. And I did that rather than watch the England game. So I won out of this weekend. I won.
I'm
the winner.
Yeah, the England game was awful. Is bouldering different to rock climbing?
Well, there's no rocks. I don't actually know. It's called a climbing centre. So you are climbing. I wasn't harnessed up. So, you know, as I say, there's an element of danger. And it's literally just little grooves of moulded, like, grooves. Like, they're hard and stuff.
Yeah.
So you can just support your weight. Yeah.
Okay.
It mimics rock climbing.
Did anyone fall?
I fell a few times, but I'm like a cat. I land on my feet. I don't know, about 6 feet. But everything's padded below. Everything's padded below.
I would be interested if I could watch people fall, I think. Otherwise, I don't really have much of an interest in bouldering at all, I don't think.
You could pay £12 for the privilege. You might be able to... You'll see some people fall.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Maybe I'll go along with you next time. Welcome to the Number One Championship Podcast, the second tier. Thank you for joining us wherever you are. Yeah, there's no games this weekend. It's an international break. So you know what? Let's just have a laid back chat, shall we? We've put out the call for questions for our Q&A, and that's exactly what we're doing here. The first half is going to be a Q&A where we answer your questions that you've sent to us via email, Twitter DMs, or Twitter in general. And then the second half, we'll talk about some of the news from the past few days in the championship. A surprising amount considering it is an international break, but there is quite a bit of news to talk about, particularly what's going on with Leicester City. So we'll talk about that in the second half, as well as the polls and the usual Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight right at the end of the show. So as I say, let's kick things off with a Q&A, Justin. And this first question is from Colin Toms. He says, "Hi lads, I'm a Coventry City fan and we of course have the strange situation where we could be in a cup final and a playoff final this season, but I'm interested to know what you would prefer. As a Championship fan, would you rather reach a cup final or get promoted?" Now, I think this is quite a difficult one, Justin. I think if we asked, would you rather win a cup or get promoted, I think just about every Championship fan would say cup, because not everyone gets to win a cup.
Yeah.
Just reaching a cup final, though, makes it a bit more difficult, doesn't it?
It does add that level of, if we don't win, then what? You know, what's the point, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But actually, it's such a good debate to have, because everyone will have a different answer. Every single human being on this planet will have a different answer. I think the idea of getting promoted, I mean, the chances of that, it's much higher than reaching a cup final. Even if you don't win the cup final, the chances of it's much higher. So I think reaching a cup final just provides memories that no one can ever take away from a football fan. And you can repeat promotion. And I think that, you know, the efforts of reaching a cup final, I don't think you can repeat that in a promotion race, other than maybe the playoffs. But then again, being a Derby supporter, I made many skirmishes as a fan in the playoffs. And, you know, other than that Leeds win, Jack Marriott scoring and, you know, towards the end of the game and coming back from behind, you know, it was a very special moment, but it didn't really count for anything. Whereas a cup final counts for something. You know, Cardiff's team, for example, when they played Liverpool all those years ago.
Yeah.
It's one of those, you know, it's just a cool team. It creates cool moments for you. And I just don't think you can ever take away take away that take that away from a supporter.
So you're going cup final, are you?
I'm going cup final, yeah.
That's interesting. I would go promotion personally, I think. I think if you get to the cup final, it's a great memory. And I get what you're saying, Justin. You can't take that away from, you know, the fans when they go on that kind of journey. But what is the legacy of that? If you get promoted, you either have the chance to establish yourself as a Premier League side, or you have a season there and get all the money that comes with it. And I think it is interesting that you bring up Cardiff, because they are pretty much the only case study I can think of here, really, where there were the runners-up in the FA Cup and the League Cup in the space of a few years. But from the outside looking in, it seems like fans of Cardiff more fondly remember the two brief spells in the Premier League than those cup runs. That's, I may be completely wrong on that, but that's how it appears to me. So based off them living off the experience, I think I would say promotion, I think. But I completely understand if you do say cup final. I think if you're in Coventry's position, where if they get past Man United, they're probably going to be facing Man City in the final. And let's be honest, the chances of them actually beating Man City in the final, slim to none. So does it make it worth the journey to the cup final? I don't think so.
Okay, you've gone from another supporter's perspective. What about yours? Do you completely agree with that, or what would you rather have happen to your team? What experience would you rather have, promotion or getting to Wembley in a cup final?
And I would still say promotion, Justin, 100%. Okay. Because I think cup final is just a day, isn't it?
That's true.
Premier League season, a season in the Premier League, even if it is just that one season, I remember that a lot more fondly, I think.
What if it was a Champions League final? That's a cup final.
Well, that's completely different, isn't it? If it's a Champions League final, it's completely different. But
Championship Cup winning it, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. If it's an FA Cup or League Cup final, then no, I don't think so. It's definitely promotion for me.
Oh, no. It's such an interesting debate, because, as I say, like, I would just love to experience cup final. I'd love to experience it. When does it happen for individual football clubs, especially clubs in the lower leagues? It just doesn't. Yeah. If you win it,
fine. Like, I would 100% rather win a trophy than get promoted.
Yeah.
Final, though, and the risk of getting smashed by Man City in front of the nation doesn't really appeal to me too much.
But what takes this a little bit further is, I think if you get promoted, and, you know, is it a case of, would you rather stay in the Premier League or win a cup final, or get to a cup final? I think that the answers would be very different, because you can be a really boring Crystal Palace, for example, in the Premier League, and nothing happens, whereas a cup final is probably the only thing that's going to spark a little bit of interest and life into your season upon season.
Well, you say that to Birmingham or Wigan fans, for example. Birmingham obviously won the League Cup, Wigan won the FA Cup. And some people may say, well, if you asked Birmingham or Wigan, would they trade in those cups to stay in the Premier League? They would say yes, but if you ask any of the fans of those specific clubs, they would 100% say rather win the cup.
despite both legacies being ownership problems and...
Of course. But just, if you ask any Birmingham fan what has been your best memory of the past 20 years, they 1,000,000% say winning the League Cup every single day of the week. And that goes to answer that debate, I suppose, in a way, doesn't it? This next question is from Shane Cottrell. He says, if you could choose, which Championship club would you pick to manage? What are you saying, Justin?
I'm taking an FM point of view on this one. It's a very easy one to answer, considering I play a lot of Football Manager. So therefore, you've got to look at the likes of, you know, has your team got a good budget? Has it got a good youth system? Good scouting? Good squad? Young squad as well? Sell assets in the future? So therefore, I think the two teams that come to mind with that thought process are Sunderland and Coventry. If I look at Sunderland mainly, I think they're probably the team that fits the bill the most. They've got a decent budget. You know, they have spent money. They signed Jack Clark last season. They signed several youngsters. Signed Joe Bellingham this summer as well. They've got a great catchment area. They've got a really good academy, bringing players through. And they've got a lot of young assets as well. So I think if I was to choose a Championship club right now, it would be Sunderland. Coventry are probably close, but I think Sunderland are a little bit further down the line in terms of their sort of squad planning and preparation for the future, whereas Coventry had to replace an entire squad last season. So that maybe it takes away from that one a little bit. So yeah, for me, it's got to be Sunderland. They tick every single box you want in a football club when taking them over.
No, I completely understand with that, Justin. Massive club. Massive, massive club. And, you know, this season hasn't been a great example of it, but they are, by and large, a well-run club. when you look at the seasons before this one. So yeah, I can understand why you would say Sunderland, and I would agree to an extent. The first club who came to mind for me was Plymouth Argyle. And I know things have gone a bit awry recently, but they are pound for pound one of the best run clubs in the country. When you become manager there, it's a great chance to play football how you want to play, while also knowing you're being backed by a brilliant recruitment team. So when that job became available a few months ago, it was a great opportunity for any manager looking to make his stamp on the game, which makes the job that Ian Foster's doing all the more worse, because it looked like Plymouth were not in a position where they could go down, but obviously right now they are. But looking at this from a long-term perspective, assuming they stay up this season, for me, Plymouth will be a Premier League club within the next decade. And that's because it's becoming increasingly more the case that the only teams who get promoted from the Championship without Premier League funding are the ones who are extremely well run. And Plymouth fit into that category. It will take time, don't get me wrong, but I think they will get there eventually. Assuming they stay up, it'll be interesting to see who they do get in next season, because I'll be surprised if Ian Foster's still in charge in August, put it that way.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, what style of football would you play then with Plymouth? Because there's only one way of playing, and you don't want to go in and just completely destroy things like Ian Foster has.
What's the one way of playing?
You've got to be forward-thinking, front foot attacking football, surely.
Well, not necessarily. I think just because Plymouth are so well run, and you will get time there, although Ian Foster may not get time there, you can suit and mould the squad to whichever way you want it to be, whichever way you want to play. And then the recruitment team behind you can, you know, work around that, really. So I don't think you have to be front footed, you know, scoring more goals than you concede kind of thing. But that's obviously how Stephen Schumacher's had a bit of success with Plymouth this season.
I get your point, but if I'm on this podcast and you're manager of Plymouth, I am laying into you week by week if you're not getting the best out of that attack. So I'm just going to point that out there.
Well, okay, fine. But in the long term, you can mould the squad to how you want to play, is the point I was making, but whatever. This next question, Justin, this is from Cameron Breslin, and this is a great question. If you had to pick a Championship player to be included in the England squad for the Euros, who would it be? Who are you saying, Justin?
The first one that comes to mind is an easy one. He's an ex-England international. It's Jamie Vardy. It's got to be Jamie Vardy. Now, not only is he a character, but the man's also got experience. So we can leave Jordan Henderson at home, because we're coming out with experience. And Jamie Vardy's won as many Premier League titles as Jordan Henderson has. So there's that question answered. You know, we've got a title winner, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, serial winner in Jordan Henderson. Well, we've got Jamie Vardy. And the man's scoring goals at the age of 37. Aging like a fine wine. Can you remember when Germany took Miroslav Klose? I think it was 2014 World Cup. He was still scoring goals. And he was about 60. Jamie Vardy's 37, he still plays like he's 25. I think you've got to take him to the Euros. Obviously, it's not going to happen because Southgate doesn't pick players in form and in the Championship. So therefore, it's not going to happen. But yeah, it's got to be old Vardy. He's not officially retired either. He just... or did he retire?
I can't remember if he officially retired or not, but he basically said he didn't want to be picked anymore, didn't he?
He wanted to spend more time with his family. Yeah, he wanted to spend more time with his family, but...
Yeah, that's the claim that he made, but I think it was more because he wasn't getting picked, which was the actual reason why. But I tell you what, Justin, penalties, Vardy would be first one up there, wouldn't he? He'd be great.
100%, 100%. Just hit them straight through the keeper. And then he'd be out pissing fans off as well when he scores. There's not one England player who does that. I mean, I love Harry Kane, he's fantastic, but he's boring. Jamie Vardy isn't. Get him on the plane.
Yeah, get him on the plane. I'd love to see it. Well, I've thought about this question a lot, and it's got to the point where I've thought about it so much that I genuinely think this player should be included in the England squad for the Euros now. Because, Justin, all I've been hearing about during this international break, other than the fucking England flag, is who should be playing in midfield. Obviously, we've got Declan Rice and Jude Bellingham. But we need someone else. Otherwise, we're going to have Jordan Henderson starting. Well, may I suggest Coventry City's Ben Sheehan. Now, Gareth Southgate's looking for a defensive-minded midfielder who can spray the ball about. And the problem is there aren't that many options in the Premier League. Now, people may say, yes, but the Championship isn't as high a standard as the Prem. Well, the way things are looking, it's probably going to be Jordan Henderson starting, who's playing for Ajax. And the Championship's definitely a better standard than the Dutch League. So why not Ben Sheaf? Why are you pulling that face, Justin?
Derek,
come on now, you're meant to be representing this league.
Make your point.
Ben Sheaf is the best all-round midfielder in the division and is a Premier League player in all but name. So why not? I mean, it's definitely not going to happen because Southgate simply refuses to even look at the Championship. But I don't think it's as ridiculous a shout as you may initially think.
I don't know. Ben Sheaf's 26 years old, for starters.
Exactly. Prime years coming up, Justin, mate.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, Calvin Phillips got on the England radar because of his really good performances in the Championship with Leeds. But I don't think Ben Sheaf is anywhere near the level of Calvin Phillips, if I'm going to be honest with you. I think Ben Sheaf is an incredible footballer and a great, great midfielder in the Championship. And he probably should be in the Premier League. But I will disagree with you. I
don't think that's a massive shout, you disagreeing with me, Justin, saying Championship Ben Sheaf should not be playing for England. But look, he's the kind of player that Southgate is looking for, isn't he? He is that kind of player. And, well, you may say, well, he is a Championship player. But if he was playing in the Premier League right now and started, you know, playing in the Premier League all season, I don't think he'd be a million miles away from the England squad right now.
You're probably right. You are probably right. And if he can sort of get near the form he's at now in the Premier League, then he might be in the conversation for that bunch of midfielders. Because I don't think the quality is quite there, because it goes almost sort of to a top class, to sort of, these are all right.
Yeah.
And maybe Ben Sheaf's, if he can repeat the form, he'd be better than, he's a bit all right. He's a bit all right. He'd be just above that category that Jordan Henderson's in right now. So, yeah, I get your points. Just as a Championship Ben Sheaf, no. Premier League Ben Sheaf, probably.
Yeah, exactly. So the only thing holding him back here is the fact that he's playing in the Championship, isn't it?
I've Gareth Southgated myself.
Exactly.
I'm looking down on him because he's playing in the Championship, and that is the reason why football's being held back in his country.
Exactly. This is what I've been saying all along. Let's move on to this question. This is from MD Cook. He wants to know who we think are the three best prospects in the Championship right now. Go on, Justin.
I got six.
Okay. Well, can you narrow it down at all, please?
I can give you the three that I picked, but I'll see who you picked, and I'll tell you the other three that sort of came to my head first.
Okay.
But the three I've picked are Yasser Spreer at Watford, Joe Bellingham, obviously, at Sunderland, and then Ralph Vandenberg at Middlesbrough. I'll start with Vandenberg, actually, because I think he's one that's gone under radar. I don't think we get too many defenders that also, light up the world, because they don't do anything spectacular. But Vandenberg's been superb for Borough. He's played with such maturity for a defender, and he's been an ever-present in that defence. He's made 29 appearances. Carrick has relied on him quite heavily. And he's just 19 years old. And I think he's one that we need to keep an eye on, because he has been very, very good for an inconsistent Borough. Joe Bellingham, the man speaks for himself. It don't really need to dwell too much on him. He's been superb for Sunderland, and he's gone through the motions a bit. He is 18 years old. It's going to happen, but he's really, really taken that sort of first choice slot that he needed to. He's taken that with both hands, and he's been brilliant. And then Yasser Spreer, 11 goal contributions for Watford this season. Really, really good. Just 20 years old. Made 21 starts and 15 appearances off the bench. He's been fantastic, and a really good technical player as well. And one I think will get even better next season, which is quite frightening, because he's been good this season. A little bit inconsistent at times, but he's been good. Even better next season if he stays at Watford.
Justin, I'm going to take this moment to kind of superhero swing in here and save you from the Twitter comments. Have you forgotten Archie Gray?
Yes. Well, this is the thing. He was a home run.
Okay.
He was a home run, and he's not going to be in the Premier League. He's going to be in the Premier League next season with Leeds. So I wanted to avoid him. But he was one of the three that came to my mind first.
Fine.
So don't worry.
Maybe you should have said that at the start.
Absolutely. But you said I had to narrow it down. So actually, if I get abuse, it's on you. It's on you.
I'm not sure that checks out. But you know what? I'm not going to disagree with the three players you mentioned there. There are three players who I think is certainly worth keeping an eye on. I've gone for a slightly different way of looking at this. I mean, I've obviously picked Archie Gray, first of all, because you are right. He is an obvious home run. He has the potential to become a truly elite player, England midfielder, Champions League midfielder, the whole lot. He's one of the brightest young talents we've ever seen at Championship level. I don't think that's up for debate, really. I've gone for Joe Bellingham as well. He's had a bit of an up and down season, but he is only 18. Him, Archie Gray, are the only two players under 20 who have played by far the most minutes. I say the only two players. They are the two players under 20 who have played by far the most minutes in the Championship this season. And it helps when he's cut from the same cloth as Jude Bellingham, which counts for a lot in my book as well. And then I was also going to pick Amari Hutchinson or Abdul Fatawu, but they are on loan, so I didn't want to just go out there and pick them. I wanted to stick with, you know, actual Championship players. So with that being said, I have also picked Tom Fellows at West Brom. I've been immensely impressed with him recently. He had only made two league starts for West Brom prior to 2024, so his rise has been pretty remarkable in the past few months, and at 20 years old has become one of the most important players at one of the best sides in the league. So certainly has a lot of potential in him, particularly if he continues to progress as much as he has done in such a short period of time. So they're my three. I'd go Archie Gray, Joe Bellingham, Tom Fellows. What do you think, Justin?
No, I agree with that. Tom Fellows is one that I think I overlooked a little bit, but he's been brilliant since the turn of the year. He's been absolutely fantastic for West Brom, and Carlos Corbin's really relied upon him. And you're right about Archie Gray. I just don't think he's going to be in the Championship next season. So that's why I wanted to avoid picking him. And you are right to deviate from loan players as well. The other two I did want to bring into it are Jaden Fuligine and Morgan Whittaker, because they are two bright players, probably on the older end of the
They're too
prospect.
Old, Justin. Too old. They've got Zimmer frames and walking sticks and everything.
They're not kids. They got hair on their chins. They can't count. They deserve shout-outs, although Whittaker's he's dropped off inevitably because Ian Foster's not allowing his sides to attack. So, unfortunately, Whittaker is probably a bit skirmish there from that point of view. And Jaden Fuligine's brilliant, but yeah, like you said, he's nearly 40 now, so what's the point?
Yeah, not even worth mentioning if you ask me. This next question is from Chauncey Onion. He says, greetings from Texas. Who is the next Neil Warnock? That's his question. He says this came to mind after this week's pod covering Gary Rowett's interim bid to save Birmingham. Is Rowett set to take over the Warnock break glass mantle? Also, could I hear page 13 from the Book of Warnock? Chauncey, you absolutely can. Give me 2 secs. This is a quote from the qualified chiropodist on a TV prank. Okay. This is what he said. We've had a great run in the FA Cup, Burton Albion, so the TV cameras came up and we did a story. I still had my surgery then, so I put my white coat on and got my scalpel out. We got one of the lads up on the table and I said, this lad, he's had a problem with his feet for a number of weeks, so they started filming, right? Now, I'm not saying this guy was thick, but the player had on a pair of monkey feet and I was taking the piss. And this guy just filmed it, hair everywhere and 6 claws, and he put it in. They showed it on telly.
No context about that whatsoever. Warnock is a qualified chiropodist, though, isn't he?
Is he actually?
I think he is.
Wow, I never knew that.
I need to fact check this. See, whilst you do that, I got to fact check.
Okay, fine. That's the quote. But I mean, the question is Gary Rowett set to be the next Neil Warnock in a couple of decades' time or so? Well, I think Justin's laughing. Go on.
Yeah. Neil Warnock studied chiropody for 3 years, and when he qualified, subsequently ran his own surgery for 8 years. And then I've got a quote here from The Guardian. My speciality was in growing toenails.
Okay.
So Neil Warnock, so a little bit more context to that page is probably that fact that Neil Warnock is a qualified chiropodist, and he's got a passion for feet. Not in that way, I don't think, but yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh, God. Well, there you go. We learn something new every day. Let's get back onto the question, Justin. Gary Rowett, is he the next Neil Warnock?
Ooh, it's such an intriguing question, because I think, firstly, Warnock is so unique. I mean, man's a qualified chiropodist. That's as unique as you get, and Gary Rowett isn't. So no way can Gary Rowett fill those shoes, wink, wink. So having the next Neil Warnock, it's probably not going to happen, because I say Warnock's so unique, but there's certainly people who can fit the bill, and maybe Rabbit is one of them. I think Guy Rabbit with the first person to say he doesn't want that to be the case. He wants a, you know, he wants a job where he's going in and putting his stamp on things over a number of years. But as far as someone who can come in and achieve a short-term objective, Guy Rabbit can do that. That being said, the next Neil Warnock, I'm not sure how possible that is with the modern-day coach, who are very, you know, style and philosophy-driven. And they need time to implement their style, whereas Neil Warnock can come in, sweep up, save you. He's Superman, isn't he? That's all he is. Whereas football clubs now, they need systemic change, need societal change. They don't need Superman hanging around and waiting for trouble. They need crime statistics going down sustainably. They need leadership from the top. And Neil Warnock, whilst he is that, is a firefighter, and football clubs don't need that.
Yeah. Well, I think you are right. I think Rabbit's got a few more long-term jobs in him yet before he becomes the kind of guy who clubs bring in for three or four months just to keep them up. But if you're trying to predict a manager now who's still going to be knocking around when he's in his 60s, I think Rabbit's a good bet, isn't he? I think you're looking for someone who is of that Warnock mould, or someone who is kind of like a championship version of Sam Allardyce, where clubs just, oh, we're in a bit of a pickle here. We need someone to come in and save us. Rabbit may be that kind of manager in the future. I think out of all the managers who have managed in the Championship over the past couple of years, he's the one who fits the bill the most, isn't he? Because he has got that remarkable record of doing a good job wherever he's been. He's not done a bad job anywhere, really, has he, no. Apart from Stoke?
Well, you know, it wasn't a bad job at Stoke, because they were only a handful of points off the playoffs. I think it was 6 points off the playoffs in November.
Yeah, but they were favourites to win the league, Justin.
They were favourites to win the league, and yes, it was. They were underperforming, but it was also, you know, an absolute shit show of recruitment that led to that, which isn't all on Gary Rowett, by the way. So, yeah, it was an underwhelming job, I think would be the best way to describe it. But yeah, you are right. I think Gary Rowett would probably be the man in the next 10 or 15 years' time. And, I mean, Neil Warnock might not even be retired by then. He might still be picking up jobs. So we can't rule that out. The age of 91, Neil Warnock's still saving clubs.
But it's going to be like a head in a test tube or something like that,
like
floating
Futurama,
around.
Futurama yeah. vibe with it. Wouldn't be
Get
surprised.
Paddy in.
And yeah, I think Rowett does tick those boxes. He's that type of manager. He gets results. He's results driven. He likes his results. And that's the type of manager Warnock is as well.
Yeah. Well, let's finish off with this question, Justin, before we get onto some of the news in the second half. And this is from Harry. He says, what's the funniest moment in Championship history? What are you going for, Justin?
On the subject of Neil Warnock, him kicking off at Nuno Espirito Santo when Wolves beat them 1-0 at the Cardiff City Stadium in the season that Wolves went up with the ridiculous squad that they had. Gary Medine missed the penalty and it was chaos, and I think Wolves ended up scoring a winner. Well, they might have drawn. I can't quite remember.
No. I can't remember what the score was at the time. I think Wolves may have been leading, but then Cardiff missed two penalties in injury time, didn't they? That was one of the most remarkable ends to a game I've ever seen in my life.
But Espirito Santo's celebrating, and Neil Warnock's not having any of it, and he's trying to get a handshake. He's trying to acknowledge Neil Warnock. Neil Warnock basically tells him to fuck off. I absolutely love that. And it's sort of one of those moments where you watch it live and you're like, oh, that was a bit like The Office. It's a bit, but then you watch it back and you go, it's really hilarious, because it's Pete Neil Warnock just telling a manager who has walked the league basically to fuck off. Love it.
It got caught on the cameras as well, didn't it? Perfect stuff. I mean, for me, this is a video that makes me laugh no matter how many times I see it. And it's Henry Lansbury booting Ryan Manning into orbit. Those listening may not be fully aware of the video based on that description, but you'll have definitely seen it if you have access to Twitter. Because it's from a couple of seasons ago, Luton v Swansea. Luton have been given a free kick and Henry Lansbury wants to take it quickly and starts running up to play a long ball. But Ryan Manning walks over to the ball, presumably to stop it being taken quickly. So Lansbury absolutely pole-axes him. And Manning goes down like a cow thrown off a motorway bridge. And Lansbury puts out his arms like, what am I supposed to do here? It's just absolute gold. But at the same time, I don't know who's in the wrong here, Justin.
No, it's one of those where I wouldn't even book either player. I'd just be like, oh, God, come on, lads. What's going on here? Just get on with it. Plebs. It's so funny just watching it back, because it's so petty from both of them. Like, Lansbury, no need to kick Ryan Manning at that point. And Ryan Manning's trying to get him sent off by rolling around on the floor. And it's like, mate, this is like stuff that 11-year-olds do. What's going on? This is adult football. What's happening? It's hilarious. So
funny. It's hilarious. I remember
The camera angle's better actually because at Kenilworth Road, it was on the conservatory side, wasn't it? Where all the conservatories are, and the camera angle's therefore looking right down on it, like literally on top of it, and it just watches it. Yeah, so it all unfolds. It's great.
Yeah, and if my memory serves me correctly, you kind of see Ryan Manning just disappear out of view of the camera because he just falls down so quickly as well. I remember the first time I saw that video and I was in tears just watching it again and again. It was absolute gold and still remains gold to this day. Truly one of the finest moments in Championship history. Justin, let's take a quick break. After that, we'll talk about some of the news from the Championship over the past few days, including what the hell is going on at Leicester City.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Second Tier podcast. So we're going to talk about some of the news from the Championship over the past few days. But first, we've got to do another round of footballers our listeners have met in strange places. So this has been an ongoing thing, if you haven't been paying attention recently. Comes after my anecdote of meeting Jamie Vardy while coming out of a train toilet. And it's just been going like wildfire ever since, hasn't it, Justin? So this is, firstly, from Stanislaw Lukomski. He says, "Hi, Virgins. I'm a loyal listener of the Second Tier podcast and Championship freak from Poland. Most of my mates, unfortunately, don't understand my fascination towards this beautiful league. But we do, Stanislaw." Anyway, he goes on to say, "Last year, I went to Warsaw Beer Festival at Legia Warsaw Stadium. While waiting for them, I bumped into ex-Nottingham Forest player Matty Cash. He seemed a pretty nice lad. He even knew some Polish words. Unfortunately, he didn't come with us to the festival to have a few pints. It seems like he's not a proper and true geezer. I hope you have a nice week and let's enjoy the rest of this crazy and entertaining season." Matty Cash, not fancying the Warsaw Beer Festival. Shameful stuff, Justin.
Shameful stuff. He looks too pretty for a beer festival. Not going to lie, doesn't he? He's got the perfect hair. He's got the tan. He probably does his eyebrows as well. He's not there for a beer festival. But he's not a true geezer. That was a great line. Matty Cash, not a geezer.
Matty Cash is very much in that category of footballers who play for countries you would never expect him to. Because you've got him, you've got Callum Stiles, who plays for Hungary. It's just a remarkable trend that we're seeing more and more of, which I thoroughly encourage and want to see more of, because Matty Cash, who I assume is from the East Midlands, considering he came through Forest Academy, just not turning up to play alongside Robert Lewandowski. Yeah, it's just great, Justin.
You forgot the most obvious one, which is Ben Brereton playing for Chile.
Yes,
that's the obvious one.
Of course. Yeah. Brereton Diaz, Callum Stiles. There must be more as well. I'll have to do some digging after this to actually find out more. But it's just a great kind of thing which has developed more and more over the past few years. And you know what? I encourage it even more. This next one is from Billy Hadaway. He says, "On a Ryanair flight to Oslo during the 2016-17 pre-season, I met Sean Scannell and Naki Wells getting on the flight, along with the rest of the Huddersfield squad on their way to Norway for a pre-season tour. Cheers, Virgins." And this final one, this is from Thomas Vugt, who's a Plymouth fan. He says, "Hi, Virgins. Love the pod. I was at my local pub only for Matt Grimes to walk in. As he's an ex-Exeter player, we then started various Plymouth and Exeter chants with a lot of the pub joining in, all in good spirits. Matt then bought me a pint and said he was soon to be leaving Exeter anyway, which he did to go to Swansea. Love the pod, Thomas. There you go, Justin. What do you think of that?
That's a lovely story. I sort of gulped a little bit because he's Exeter and they're Plymouth, and I thought the pub was going to go at Matt Grimes there. But you know what? They didn't. It was all in harmony, and he left Exeter. He's gone to Swansea. He had a good career. It was a good interaction. Everyone's happy. Everyone's smiling. Love it.
I'm just enjoying after the Luke Williams, you know, story from after the South Wales Derby where he's having shots with the fans, whatever. You know, Matt Grimes joining in as well. It's just good stuff. More content like that, please. So if you do have an occasion where you met a footballer in a strange place, please let us know. secondtierpod@gmail.com. Let's go on to some of the news from the past few days in the Championship, Justin. And we'll kick things off with what's going on at Leicester City. You may have seen this. There's been a lot of back and forth recently about this, but Leicester have now started urgent legal proceedings against the Premier League and EFL after being charged with allegedly breaking spending rules. In a statement, the club said they were compelled to act. If found guilty, they could face a points deduction. The club have also been placed under a transfer embargo by the EFL. Leicester have been referred to an independent commission by the Premier League for the alleged breach of rules for their last three seasons in the top flight and for failing to submit audited finances. They're also subject to a separate financial probe by the EFL. So this isn't going to affect this season, but whichever division Leicester are in, there's a chance they could start off with a points deduction from the sounds of it. So what have you made of all of this, Justin?
It's not really a surprise. They broke the rules that were set by the owners of each Premier League club. Everton have been punished, Nottingham Forest have been punished. If you go back to the Championship, Derby and Reading have been punished for similar infringements. So, look, take your tonic and move on from it. I think that's the only thing is they have said themselves that they feel, like Leicester, that is, they feel ambition is being punished. And to an extent, they are correct. The system is broken. This is why a regulator is going to be hugely beneficial, which we've spoken about in a previous episode. But at the end of the day, I'd be interested to see who voted for the profit and sustainability rules when they first came in. And if all the Premier League clubs and chairmen and owners voted for it, they voted for it. So therefore they voted for these rules to be in place, and therefore they've got to take the tonic when the punishment comes in if they break those rules. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, well, I think you're correct, Justin. I don't want to bother with all the legal stuff because I find it quite tedious. And I don't know if the charges are right or wrong, whether they'll be found guilty of them or what. But what it does mean, though, is Leicester have got to get promoted this season, doesn't it? Because if not, they could have a points deduction. They'll have to sell several of their best players, and with the embargo, might not be able to replace them. So yeah, that's quite a frightening position for them to be in, isn't it?
It is. It is frightening. It is so frightening because, as I say, I mean, we saw it with Sheffield United, who had ownership problems last season in trying to sell the club for as long as they were. They had several transfer embargoes. They couldn't recruit last January. That didn't help things. You know, they were really skimping in terms of players that were available because they had so many injury problems. And whilst they didn't suffer a points deduction, they were unable to sign players, and that made the season very much more difficult. And although they did go up, which is superb for them, it's made this season in the Premier League miserable because, again, not being able to sort of long-term plan for their squad. So for Leicester, they're not going to be able to do the same either because, you know, potential transfer embargo, points deduction makes it very difficult to attract players. Will Maresco stay around with those things hanging above the football club? Maybe, maybe not. You know, it's an issue. I will add, on a legal perspective, they do have Nick DiMarco representing them, who is a football lawyer and one of the best football lawyers in the country. So I think that's the only positive you can take from this story.
Well, fair enough. If Leicester got promoted, then I was previously pretty convinced they would stay up quite comfortably and maybe even be looking towards mid-table, top half kind of area. Now this has put a bit of doubt in my mind, and what it will mean for them if they're still in the Championship next season, God, it's quite scary to actually think about. The thing is with Leicester, they have sold a lot of players for a lot of money in recent years. You think of Madison, Barnes, Fofana, even going a bit further back, you've got the likes of Chilwell, Maguire, Mahrez.
Yeah.
But they've still been bitten by these rules. So it says a lot about how much money they've wasted in recent years. By my count, they spent around $85 million on transfer fees for five players in their last 2 years of the Premier League on Harry Suter, Victor Christensen, Patson Daka, Yannick Vestergaard and Boubacari Samara. Now, a couple of those players have done quite well for them in the Championship, but by and large, that is an awful lot of money which has been wasted on crap, let's be honest. And that's before you even get into the wages and the wages of several other players at the club. And look, I did make the point earlier in the season about how much Leicester overspent in the summer before this season started, and I think I've been proven right here with that. So while clubs like Leicester are quick to point the finger at the Premier League, EFL, whoever, they have sometimes got to look at themselves in the first place and say, God, we have wasted a significant amount of money over the years.
This is why a regulator is so interesting, because the regulator can probably won't say this, but they can go, you fucked up, guys. You really fucked up, right? Yeah. You did this, you did that, right? You fucked it, lads. That's it. So take your tonic. We're punishing you because you wasted a lot of money. It's your fault you recruited so badly. And it's your fault that you, in the efforts of chasing ambition, you overspend. Like Derby have, like Reading have, like Sheffield Wednesday have, like so many football clubs have tried to chase ambition, they've overspent and they've been punished for it. Everton, same. Forest, the same. Leicester, now the same. Just take your tonic, move on. It's crap, but hopefully regulator comes in and makes things a little bit more consistent for everybody. System's broken. It's a system that you voted for, you big plebs. I'm sorry, I just keep using it, but it's just plebbish nature. It's proper thicko stuff. They did this to themselves. They did this to themselves.
So it's not looking good for Leicester City, but it is looking good for their promotion rivals, Ipswich Town, because an American private equity firm have bought a 40% stake in the Tractor Boys at a cost of up to $105 million. The co-founders of Bright Path Sports Partners will join the club's board. Chief exec Mark Ashton will continue to manage the day-to-day running of the club and said the deal further secured its long-term future. The company, Bright Path Sports Partners, this is, said they have... It's not a great name, is it?
acronym, that one. BPSP.
Yep. The company said they had looked at teams all over the world for possible investment opportunities, but having held talks with Ipswich, they stopped looking. Just then, this looks to be great news, which will keep them on sound financial footing, even if they fail to go up this season, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think it's good the club that is getting investment. I think it's absolutely necessary because football clubs aren't sustainable. I mean, Ipswich did just post their accounts for last year, the 22-23 year, posted an £18 million loss, which is to be expected. Makes me a bit uncomfortable because I don't like huge losses, but hey. Well,
by Championship standards, that's pretty good going, really, isn't it?
Well, this is what I mean. It makes me uncomfortable because I'm, by nature, a very stingy, very frugal human being. So therefore, clubs spending as much as they do, just makes me a little bit uncomfortable. But look, if BPSP, to call them, have come along and seen Ipswich, despite posting an £18 million loss and gone, okay, there's a sustainable model in place. This is good news. Let's stop here. I think that's a good thing because an investment firm is not going to look at a club hemorrhaging money and go, we're going to get a return on that, because you're not. You look at Chelsea, not going to get a return on £1 billion investment, are you? It's not going to happen. So therefore, I think this happening with Ipswich is a positive. And I think it's a testament to how far the club's come in the last 3 years, because it really was in the mire under, well, who was the previous owner? I can't remember his name now.
Marcus Evans.
It really was not in a state, but it just stopped caring. And that's what you don't want in ownership.
Now, we don't know for sure whether Sheffield Wednesday will still be in the Championship next season, but could Danny Rule be staying in the league whatever happens? Well, the I newspaper is reporting Sunderland are interested in making him their new manager. What do you think, Justin? You're a big Danny Rule fan, aren't you? Would you like to see him continue in the Championship next season?
I really would. Whether it's with Sheffield Wednesday or another club, I really do want to see him in the Championship next season, because I want to see what he can do with a pre-season behind him, with a summer of, you know, being able to recruit his own players and whatnot, because he's not really been able to do that. I mean, the players he recruited for or the players Sheffield Wednesday, I should say, recruited in January, have had a huge impact on the football club in a very short space of time. So actually, you know, what can Danny Rawl do with a summer behind him? That's the really intriguing thing. He's a young coach with a really good philosophy. He speaks so well as well. He's way beyond his years. He looks 25, but he speaks of a man with wisdom of a 55-year-old man who's seen it all in a football perspective. Yeah, I want to see more of him. And you know, if it's Sunderland, that, you know, that makes me very, very excited, because, as I say, I pick Sunderland for the club I want to manage in the Championship. It's a perfect model for a young coach, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to disagree with you, Justin. Danny Rawl's done an amazing job at Sheffield Wednesday since coming in. And if he keeps them up, it genuinely will be one of the greatest jobs that we've ever seen at this level. Because they looked so far gone, didn't they, at the time when he came in. So it would be truly remarkable. And I don't think anyone at Sheffield Wednesday would begrudge him leaving if they do indeed go down. Maybe even if they stay up, they won't begrudge him either, because he's clearly a very switched on coach, really tactically aware, and just managing to get the Sheffield Wednesday side playing is remarkable in itself. So it'll be interesting to see how he would do at Sunderland. It's a very different job managing a side who are fighting relegation to one looking to get into the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see how he does with that. But based off the small sample size, I mean, it is only, 6 months that we've seen of Danny Rawl. He looks like a very, very good coach, and it would be a perfect match, I think, with these two if that were to happen. So I'd give it a massive thumbs up. I think it'd be an incredibly brilliant appointment if that were to happen. Well, that might be someone coming in at Sunderland. Here's someone looking likely to leave Sunderland. Jack Clark has 2 years left on his contract at the Stadium of the Light, but his agent, who is interestingly former Leeds defender Ian Hart, says he won't be accepting a new deal because Sunderland are refusing to break away from their current wage structure. So it sounds like it'll be pretty surprising if Jack Clark was a Sunderland player next season, wouldn't it, Justin?
No, it would. I think, firstly, credit Sunderland for refusing to break away from their current wage structure. I think that's really important for Championship clubs to really heed to. Because if you do hemorrhage money, and it was Sunderland have been in this position before, you will drop down the league because you have to start sell your assets at reduced prices. And that's not going to happen with Jack Clark. He's got 2 years left on his deal. He's had an incredible 2 years at Sunderland, and I think he's almost doubled his value at what Sunderland paid, because it was up to £10 million. The final deal could go up to £10 million for Jack Clark when he signed from Spurs. Initial fee probably nowhere near that, a bit like the Ellis Sims one to Coventry.
Yeah.
Initial fee probably nowhere near that, but they're going to get a very, very nice wedge from Jack Clark to reinvest back into the squad. So I think in that case, it's going to suit all parties, because I don't think Sunderland are a selling club by any means, but the model at Sunderland is going to be, let's recruit young, let's develop, let's improve, let's sell, let's reinvest. It's a good model to have. Brentford proved it to be a huge success for them, and it put them into the Premier League. Might well be the case Sunderland. It'll be sad to see him go from the Championship, but I think he deserves it as well, because he has been the best player, or the best winger, most consistent winger we've seen at its level over 2 years.
Yeah, spot on, Justin. Absolutely spot on everything you said there. I think they should sell him. Obviously, losing a player as good as Jack Clark is a huge blow for any Championship side. But if they get 20, 25 million for him, it's a great opportunity to reinvest that money back into the squad. And if they do that, they could finally get that elusive striker they've been trying to sign now for 2 years and get a replacement for Clark. And you know what? Maybe still have money in the bank as well to strengthen elsewhere. Obviously, it will take a lot of smart recruitment to do that, and it's a lot easier said than done. But Sunderland have shown in the past that they're capable of doing it. So this should be seen as an opportunity as opposed to being the end of the world. Clark deserves to be playing Premier League football next season. It's not his fault that he's been let down by the club making poor managerial appointments and his teammates simply not being as good as him. So sell him while his stock is high and be smart with your recruitment like you were last season. That's how Sunderland should be doing business, in my opinion.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. That's how most, or if not most, all Championship clubs should be doing their business. You have no right to hold on to a player and then release him. You look at Blackburn holding on to their assets, and eventually they run down their contracts and they're not worth anything or anywhere near where they should be worth. And then Blackburn can't reinvest that money back into the squad. And you know, the situation that they're in now in terms of playing wise, diminished assets, got young players coming through, which is good, but they've got to sort of re-establish them. And that's the situation you can find yourselves in, where if you sell players at the peak value, reinvest the money, you know, improve those players, and it becomes a constant cycle. You can be where Brentford are. You can be where Brighton are. That's the end goal. They've shown that it can be done. So why can't it be done on Sunday? It can. Simple.
Justin, let's do the polls. This is the part of the show where we give the listeners three questions on Twitter. Just want to get their thoughts on everything to do with the championship. So the first question we asked was this. Which would you rather do? Reach a cup final, get promoted to the Prem? This was obviously the first question in our Q&A. What did you say in the end?
I said reach a cup final. Yeah, I'm a romantic. I want to reach a cup final.
I said get promoted to the Prem, and the listeners agree with me. 66% of people said they would rather get promoted than reach a cup final. 34% said they would rather reach the final. Who would you most like to see get promoted from League One into the Championship this season? Barnsley, Bolton, Derby or Portsmouth? I feel like you'll be a bit biased in this one, Justin.
No, I don't want to see Paul Warmball in the Championship, no way. You've got to bear in mind, we've got to cover the Championship next season, and therefore I'd have to talk about them, and I'm going to hate it. I don't want Portsmouth to come up. I don't want Portsmouth, big club. Although, Ian Everett is great for bitter statements after games when they lose. Okay. So purely for the story, maybe Ian Everett's Bolton.
Fine, okay. Ian Everett's Bolton is Justin's pick. 48% of people said Portsmouth, 22% said Bolton, 16% said Derby, 14% said Barnsley. I think most people want to see Portsmouth back in the Championship.
That would be good.
It's been years since we've had them, and they're such a big club to be messing around in League One and League Two. So
we
it's
need
about
cowbell.
Time they get back.
We need the cowbell.
We also
back.
Need the cowbell there. Yes, that's a very good point. And finally, which is better, Marvel films or Star Wars films?
Fucking Star Wars films. Marvel's so crap. It's so crap. Honestly, you are a massive virgin for liking Marvel.
Hey, I embrace my virginity when it comes to Marvel. I will be a bit more diplomatic than you. I've watched Star Wars. I just can't get into it.
Have you watched it, though? Which one have you watched?
I've watched a few of them. I watched the very first one. Can't remember what it was called.
Great.
I watched the... Was it Rogue One with you? I watched that with you.
Did you? That was good. That's a good one.
Which one's the one where... Harrison Ford dies. Is that...
Come on. Spoilers, Ryan. Spoilers, come on. That's not Rogue One. That is A Force Awakens.
Okay, sorry. That's the one I watched with you. I've watched a few of that. I just can't get into it. I'm sorry. Whereas Marvel, on the other hand, the great Marvel films are by far and away some of the best films we've produced as mankind in the past 20 years.
Incredible. So a bloody ant for a superhero, for goodness sake. An ant.
What does that mean?
Exactly. What does it mean?
I don't know. I don't get what your point is. You watched Endgame, didn't you? Endgame and Infinity War.
Yeah, but I went because I had to, because society told me I had to go.
What's the best Star Wars film?
The best Star Wars film is Empire Strikes Back. Yeah.
Is Infinity War better than that?
No. No.
Shocking shout. It is not.
It is not.
It's just not even up for debate, if you ask me. It's a close one between the listenership. 56% of people said Star Wars. 44% said Marvel. Justin's claiming that as a victory, just like he did in the EU referendum. Right, now it's time for this.
Hi, Simon, Grace and Edge.
Yes, it's time for Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight. So Justin's going to ask me to name eight of a certain subject. All I've got to do is name all eight. So, for example, if he would say, name Steve Bruce's last eight clubs, I would say Villa, that's one down, Newcastle, another down. But if I were then to say Weymouth, I would lose a life. So all I need to do is give all eight answers without losing all my lives. And you can get involved in the fun by sending in your Hateful Eights for either Justin or I to answer. Send them into secondtierpod@gmail.com and you could get a shout out the next time we do a Hateful Eight. Who's this from, Justin?
This one's from Blake. I think it came last week because it was before the South Wales Derby. I thought it was a good one. So I want you to name the last eight managerial combinations of the South Wales Derby. It's a toughie. Oh. So Simon's going to give you three lies, but I think you can do this.
Okay. So when you say combinations, is that me saying more than one manager twice?
Pretty much, yeah. So I want both managers from each club. It's simple.
Is that including the one that's just gone?
It is, yes. So tell me that one first, and you'll get one off. You'll get one chips off the old
Errol Bullitt and Luke Williams.
Correct. That's your first combination. Swansea won 2-0, of course. I'm going to tell you the results as well.
Right. In that case, then, the one before that must have been Errol Bullitt and Michael Duff?
It was. It was. Yeah, okay. It was. Old Errol and Mickey didn't go very well for Mickey. They lost that game. They lost that game, and obviously Mickey pissed everybody off.
Yep, not wrong. How many lines are you giving me, by the way?
3. Simon said he's going to give you 3.
Cool. Cheers, Simon. okay, well, before that, it would have been Russell Martin and Sabri Lamouchi.
Correct. Swansea won 3-2. It was April 2023, okay. April last year.
Now, Cardiff had 3 managers last season. So I'm not sure if the middle one was in charge for the South Wales derby or not, but I'm going to say him anyway and just take it on the chin if not. Russell Martin and Mark Hudson.
Correct. October 2022, I should say. It was an eventful year in which Russell Martin did the double over Cardiff.
Yes, of course. And then before that was Steve Morrison, who I assume must have also had a derby where he faced off with Russell Martin.
You would assume correctly. That was in April 2022. Swansea won 4-0. So, yes, not too many wins for old Cardiff there. A lot of clean sheets as well.
How many more have I got left, Justin?
You've got 3 more. You've gone in chronological order so far. This is where it probably gets a little bit sticky.
Yeah. Who was before Steve Morrison? Was it Big Mick? I think it must have been. So I'll say Big Mick McCarthy and Russell Martin.
Yeah, Big Mick McCarthy. You are correct. October 2021. Swansea won 3-0. It may have been one of Mick McCarthy's last jobs, if I remember rightly. Last games as Cardiff manager. It might have been his last, actually.
It does sound right. Right, okay. Now we're getting to sticky territory. Because Russell Martin wasn't there before that, I don't think. So we're getting into the Steve Cooper era. So I'm going to say Steve Cooper and Mick McCarthy.
You would assume correctly. A very, very boring game, I imagine. I can't quite remember it. 2 very disciplined managers. Cardiff won 1-0. That was their last win prior to their victory earlier on this season, where Bullitt won against Mikael Duff.
Right, okay. Now, this is the last one, but it's a tricky bugger because who was in charge before Mick McCarthy?
You've done really well, I'll be honest with you, but you've had to really rack your brain. Yeah, you've done it in order. You had to really rack your brain.
This is the last one, isn't it?
This is the last one.
Oh, I'm going to say Steve Cooper and Neil Harris.
You are absolutely correct, Ryan. You're absolutely correct. He's done
it. There we go.
Simon,
look at that.
Simon Grace has got a beaming smile. I know he's very frustrated.
He's looking
smile
down
on his
at
face.
Me. Yeah. Have I done a good job, boss?
Yes, son. Says Simon Grayson. Up in the clouds, so Simon. Yes, you have. You've absolutely smashed that. Well done. To be honest, I was putting this together and I was really racking my brain because I was trying to do it from memory and then I did fact check it. Don't worry.
Good.
And yeah, you obliterated that. Well done. Really, really Cardiff set of managers. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they've gone through a few, haven't they, over the past few seasons. Jesus Christ. But there you go. That was top-class hateful eating from me there, if I do say so myself. I'm really proud of that. I'm heading into the week full of beans now after that. That was really good. So that was Simon Grayson, Hateful Eight, and this has been the Second Tier Podcast. Now, as you may be aware, the next round of games in the Championship are this Friday, on Good Friday. So that means we're doing our episodes this week a day earlier than usual. So we're doing the midweek show on Wednesday. The preview show is on Thursday. And then we'll react to the Good Friday games on Saturday. So it's literally the usual weekly schedule, except everything's a day earlier because of Easter and the resurrection of Christ. So this has been
a lesson for everybody. A lesson for everybody. That happened. Allegedly.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, God. This has been the Second Tier Podcast. We will be back again on Wednesday. I've been Ryan Dilks.
I've been Justin Peach.
And a big thank you for listening.
Second Tier is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.